We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This week, my guest is Ali Mostafavi, founder of Resilitix, a data and AI-empowered digital twin platform for disaster and resilience. The software uses data and algorithms to provide its partners with important information, such as road flooding, hospital capacity, power outages, and more, in near real time. On the show today, Ali shares how he navigated Hurricane Beryl to provide critical information to emergency teams and took the opportunity as well to grow and improve his company's platform. Ali, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Especially since I know you've been very busy these past few weeks, and we're going to talk about why specifically. But first, I was wondering if you could give me and listeners a little bit of your background in academia and in resilience innovation.
Sure. My background is I'm a professor of civil engineering at Texas A&M University. I joined Texas A&M back in 2016, and I was within the first year in my career at Texas A&M when Hurricane Harvey happened. And because of the impact that Harvey had and also my research on disaster resiliency, we did an extensive amount of work on disaster resilience. I give you some interesting stories later, but that was the beginning of our extensive work on disaster resilience technologies and data-driven methods and models to augment the resilience of communities. And it's been the case for the past 10 years. And it was back in 2021 that we started receiving a lot of attention and interest from industry, public sector, private sector, contacting me. Ali, we saw this paper, this publication that you just put out, very interesting work. Could this be done for our organization, our agency? We want to analyze our disaster risk. We want to evaluate our recovery. Could this be done? And that was kind of the moment I realized that the solutions for which we have the proof of concept can have broader impact. And that led us to a spin off this startup from my lab at Texas A&M, which is Resilitix, and I'm the founder of the company. And we've been working on scaling the solutions we develop in the lab into technologies that can be adopted by public and private sector for responding and dealing with disasters.
Yeah, well, let's just go ahead and dive in to talk about what Resilitix does exactly, and maybe dive a little deeper into that origin story of, you know, creating a company from your research.
Sure. Let me go a little bit further back. You know, my own experience of Harvey, that was the moment that the ideas of the technology came to my mind. When I moved to Texas A&M, I initially moved to College Station, but because of my wife's career, we had to move down to Houston, and I commute back for between Houston and College Station for work. But we had just moved into Houston when Hurricane Harvey happened. And as a new resident, when Harvey happened, I have no idea of what's going on, you know, whether my home will be flooded. And when most of the streets close to our house was flooded, how to get to places, whether we can access food. When we had some power outage, I had no idea of how long will it take for the power to be restored. And those are usually the information that most of the residents need during disaster. So I started looking for information. And to my surprise, there wasn't any place that I can get those information. And I started looking into social media. I looked into back then Twitter, and try to see what others are experiencing, what others are saying. And that was a moment I realized the big gap in information availability related to situational awareness during disasters. And by situational awareness, I mean knowing what's going on when a disaster and its impact unfolds. Okay. And that moment led to a series of research questions based on which we wrote research proposals, got funding support from our different organizations, including the National Science Foundation. And we did a series of research studies and publication that led to Resilytics. So what is Resilytics? Resilytics, the name is a combination of resilience empowered by analytics. So we combine this. And the name is based on resilience and analytics combined. And what we are providing is essentially we want to, this is our mission. This is actually a mission statement that we go back every week in our team meeting to just make sure that we know what our mission is. Our mission is to disrupt the impacts of disaster on communities using data and intelligence. We believe that if communities, and by communities we mean residents, public sector, private sector, governmental organizations, have the data that they need and intelligence they need at different stages of disaster, during mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery, they can make more informed decisions that ultimately reduce the impacts of disasters on communities.
Yeah, I think it's the situation you're describing. I know you were a new Houston resident, but honestly, everyone in Houston, new or old, had that same experience of just, we're so used to having information at our fingertips. Why is it different during
a Exactly. Exactly. And I know we will talk about Beryl, but we had an incident of that during Hurricane Beryl. People were using Whataburger app to see the status of outages. This is an indication that people need information. And in Resilytics, let me continue on what our technology is. At Resilytics, our main technology is an AI-driven digital twin for situational awareness. And what is digital twin? Digital twin is a platform that provides insight about what's going on in a community right now when a disaster is still unfolding and its impacts are realized. It tells community members which roads are flooded, which areas have lost access to food and the, you know, food lifelines, which areas have elevated visits to hospitals because of the impacts of disasters. So it provides the information about the community on a platform using data that can help people understand what the situation is and can make informed decision. And that's essentially what everybody needs when a disaster happens. What's going on? What are the impacts? And these impacts just evolve with, the characteristic of the hazard in Hurricane Beryl. The landfall and pass-through was just 24 hours, but then we had, you know, a widespread extended outage that led to impacts such as food access, such as elevated visits to hospitals because of the, you know, heat wave that we had following the storm and all of that. And these situations, nobody can predict them before the event. So when an event happens, we need to know what the situation is. And our technology is a digital twin that brings in various streams of data and feed them into different types of AI-based methods and models, artificial intelligence-based models. It could be machine learning models, deep learning models, computer vision-based models. I provide examples later on in our conversation. But then based on the output of those models, communities, residents, public, private sector, government organizations, public officials, emergency management organizations can see the impacts and what's going on and can get the information they need so that they can respond and cope with the disaster impacts better.
It just, the more you describe it, it just sounds like such a necessary technology, especially during a storm. Of course, you know, news and the city is responding and telling everyone to stay put, you know, don't go outside. But obviously, that's not always the case. So there needs to be information if in emergency situations, right? So yes. I guess from that question, and you've kind of mentioned a little bit, but can you describe the users that you are working with now and you know, what future users you have in mind as well?
Absolutely. So our primary users for the current state of our technology, we are a young startup. We continuously work on improving our technology and its capabilities for diverse users. But primary users at this point are emergency management organizations at the local, state, and federal level. And the capabilities our current technology have are very well suited for those organizations. So let me give you some examples. One of the key features of our technology is before the event, like a hurricane or storm event, our technology facilitates near real-time monitoring of the evacuation and preparedness activities of communities. So when a hurricane happens, the public officials, emergency management organization coordinators can usually they issue voluntary or mandatory evacuation orders. But when they do that, you know, the real data about to what extent residents have followed those orders are missing, okay, until there is an impact. But our technology provides near real-time data that this area, and by area, I mean census tract, very specific, fine resolution, spatial area, or this neighborhood has not evacuated. This neighborhood have evacuated. This neighborhood is partially evacuated. And this is even before this storm or hurricane make a landfall. And emergency management organizations can look at it and say, hey, you know, we made a voluntary evacuation order. So this area has evacuated. So if there will be impacts in this area, probably, you know, there wouldn't be immediate, you know, relief and rescue needs. But it seems that these neighborhoods over here have not evacuated. If there are impacts there, we have to prioritize. So compare this with the situation that there is absolutely no information about which areas have evacuated or not. So this is one of the core capabilities we provide. The same thing for preparedness. We evaluate preparedness based on the patterns of visits to grocery stores, to places that people usually visit to prepare for disaster. So one of the things we have seen in recent events is because we have rapidly accelerating hurricanes, people don't get enough time to evacuate, so they stay shelter in place. But staying shelter in place could be dangerous if people don't have enough food stored, enough water stored. And it's important to know the level of preparedness of different neighborhoods. So our technology provides that the same way for evacuation, that this area has prepared well, this area has not prepared well. So using that data, if there is an extensive power outage, we can look into the preparedness level and say that, hey, this area that has extensive power outage and it's been going on for three days, they were not prepared. So this area requires food. And after the event, or when the event makes the landfall, we look into disruptions to the daily life activities of residents, especially in terms of access to food, access to healthcare. We call these critical facilities. So our technology provides a way to monitor which areas have disruptions in access to food lifelines, so that it provides the emergency management organizations, NGOs, food banks to prioritize allocation of food to different neighborhoods, again, in a proactive manner rather than waiting until people call 211. We provide this near real-time insights about which areas seems to have disrupted access to their food lifelines, because either the grocery store that is close to those neighborhoods has no power, or the road is inundated, or for whatever reason, the access to food is disrupted. And these capabilities in near real-time insights can make a big difference in terms of the efficiency of the response and recovery efforts.
Well, I know you've really kind of talked already about a lot of different types of data you're providing on the platform, but can you give us some more examples of what types of data you're implementing onto the platform and where you're getting this data and, you know, the process of optimizing the data? It sounds like a beast to wrangle.
Yes. So that's where our fundamental R&D comes to play. We harness various types of data sets, most of which are publicly available, but we have found clever ways to evaluate, to use them and evaluate them for emergency response and disaster response applications in our platform. So some of the applications that I mentioned, you know, those have been data sets have been around and has been used for, let's say, traffic engineering, traffic analysis. But we have used the same data that have been existed before, but developed algorithms so that we can use those data for monitoring evacuation, for monitoring, preparedness, for evaluating access to, food and hospitals. And other types of data that we are using is satellite imagery for rapid damage assessment after disasters. We have a technology for, as part of our digital twin, for rapid assessment of damages to buildings and properties based on satellite images. And this provides a really quick estimation of how many buildings have experienced what extent of damage within 48 to 72 hours after an event. And this satellite imagery have been available, have been used for other use cases, such as land use change and agricultural applications, water resource applications. But we use the same data that has been around for several years from now and use them for disaster response applications. So most of the data we use are publicly available data sets, but they haven't been used for disaster resiliency application. And that's been one of our main contributions in our methods and algorithms to develop those methods and algorithms in a way that we can use these available data and integrate them in different ways for disaster resilience and disaster management application.
Well, I think what's very unique about ResiliTex too is that you don't actually get to decide when you're going to get to pilot and test out the product, right? Like a storm comes in and there you go. Here's your testing ground. So exactly. Tell us about this month and what it's been like with ResiliTex and dealing with, you know, the before, during, and after of Hurricane Beryl.
Absolutely. So this is exactly the case, as you mentioned. You know, we were in the process of fine-tuning some of our methods and algorithms behind our technology. And our team was so focused on that. And all of a sudden, we have Beryl. And we had prior conversations and, partnerships with local agencies. And this is our home. This is the best place so that we can help and provide our technology for helping the community in need. So when disaster has happened, and in this case Beryl, we go to activation mode. So we put our technology development and R&D efforts on hold and try to test our technology in an operational setting so that we meet two purposes. One purpose is to test our technology to validate whether our technology provides the value and intelligence that it intends to provide, and also to help the communities and our partners and users on the ground in making decisions. So when Beryl happened, we deployed our technology in different timelines and different phases. The first step for us was to monitor evacuations in coastal counties. So several counties issued mandatory and voluntary evacuation orders. And the first thing we did was we looked at those counties and looked into the neighborhood level evacuation levels up to the landfall of the hurricane. And those evacuation orders were made relatively close to the landfall within 24 to 36 hours. So it was very important to know which areas didn't get a chance to evacuate. And we had this neighborhood level evacuation level, and we provided those insights to the local and state emergency management offices. When the hurricane made landfall, and it was a windy event with tremendous wind speed and passed through the area within a day. Afterwards, the main issue was power outage. And in our prior conversation with emergency management coordinators in the area, we found that food access and food distribution is priority for them in the immediate aftermath. So, and we had this prior discussion that we provide them with disruptions in what we call food lifelines. Those are grocery stores, convenience stores, where people get their food. and we monitor disruptions in the food lifelines in near real time. We provide daily updates of what neighborhoods seem to have disrupted access to food lifelines, and also which food lifelines, which stores seem to experience disruptions. For example, which HEB seems to have a disruption and it's been closed, or which dollar store that neighborhood people go there to get their, you know, some of their grocery store, grocery stuff has been closed. So we provided that data on a daily basis, and we deployed that both for coastal counties and also Harris County, and we communicated with our partners on the ground. We were in the process of monitoring Food Lifeline that we received, you know, some questions about the elevated visits to hospitals. We were told that because of the heat wave, Beryl became a health emergency event, extensive power outage, heat wave. It has a health impact. And actually, the Secretary of the Health and Human Services of the national federal government issued a health emergency call for Beryl for Houston. So what we did, and this wasn't the technology that we had already, so we had to kind of come up with a quick prototype to monitor elevated visits to hospitals so that we can provide to our partners which neighborhoods seem to have elevated visits to hospitals and which hospitals are receiving those elevated visits, so that they can monitor that and can respond to those areas proactively. And right now, that thankfully most of the outages are restored, what we are focusing on is on damage assessment. So we use our technology for satellite imagery for rapid damage assessment. We unfortunately, there has been damages because of the fallen trees and roof damages, etc. So we are running our methods so that we can have an estimate of the damages and communicate that in with our partners. And also, we monitor the recovery of the community. So we, one of the technologies we have developed, but we have tested it in limited scale, and this is a very suitable setting to test it in a broader scale, is we monitor the recovery of the communities at the neighborhood level moving forward. So based on our technology, we can identify which neighborhoods already recovered, which neighborhoods are struggling with recovery. And that's essential, because when recovery resources are allocated, usually they are based on data that comes with significant lag. So usually there are surveys of communities, there are data collected based on people requesting help, requesting aid, and those data has lag, and these lagging data sets delays the resource allocation. Delayed resource allocation leads to delayed recovery. And for some areas, especially where areas where vulnerable residents, low-income, elderly people reside, these delayed recoveries can be very consequential. So our technology provides daily monitoring of the recovery of the neighborhoods, and we provide those data products, again, with our partners so that they can identify areas that have lagging recovery and can prioritize those areas for a resource allocation.
Well, I think it's really interesting, and you've already touched on in the moment having to pivot and provide the hospital data. Are there any other lessons learned and how you've developed the technology in the wake of Hurricane Beryl, just from living through that and then also now and getting feedback from users kind of in the retrospective?
Sure. So two main lessons we learned was, first of all, being disaster impacted while providing disaster intelligence data is something we had thought about, but we were not fully ready for it. So my house didn't have power for a few days. So I had to find ways to connect to the internet, coordinate with the team, coordinate with our users, process some of those data. So that was one of our lessons, to make sure that our business continuity is not impacted, which thankfully it wasn't impacted during events affecting our own area where we provide the response. Another main lesson learned we had in this event, as you mentioned, was the ability to innovate on the spot, you know, because our technology has different capabilities. And as we work with our users and deploy it in different use cases, we identify new ways that it can inform decisions. But then when an event happens, we start receiving, you know, requests and questions, and our partners sending me emails, Ali, could you find out this? And in this case as well, could you find out, you know, about the health impacts and, you know, which areas are more impacted for this, you know, elevated visits to hospitals? And we had to just be, you know, agile and think about, okay, we have data, we have, you know, methods, how we can, you know, modify, adapt our method so that it can be responsive. And at the same time, you know, because we haven't tested it, we have to also be able to verify to a certain degree that we are confident when we provide those insights and intelligence in front of our users, we have enough confidence that, you know, these are actually the areas. Of course, with uncertainty, and we communicate that uncertainty to our users. So these were the two main lessons that, you know, there are capabilities that our technology provides that we are not aware of, and they reveal themselves in the real event. And we have to be adaptable so that we can capture those capabilities and integrate them into our technology on the spot when it's needed. In terms of the feedback, you know, most of our partners are still in activation mode. So our communications is very effective. This is the data, what you need, tell us, we provide it. So usually we have this debriefing of the feedback about, you know, things that they wish they could have, et cetera, a few months after the events when they have more bandwidth. But overall, we had very positive feedback. Actually, we received two notes from two organizations with which we did not provide the data directly, but we provided to our partner and told them that, you know, well, you're welcome to provide this data to other partners. And they thanked us for the data, and they said that it helped them, you know, with you know, their food relief and food distribution, which was a very positive and encouraging feedback for us, because this is what we are about. You know, we are about more social impact. And then, you know, other things that most of the startups are in terms of disrupting technology, you know, disruptive technologies, et cetera. So when we see this kind of social impact from users that we don't directly interact with, and they reach out to us and just say, hey, your data was very helpful, thank you for providing it, that's very encouraging. So we look forward to doing it more and understanding from our users how our technology performs.
Yeah. Well, you know, just a side note, congrats for living through that, because I'm sure there's many startup founders listening in and just kind of relating to that challenge that a storm has on running a company, but then you're also running a company that is providing data about the storm. Yes. So you're kind of in that really difficult position. And unfortunately, we still have the rest of hurricane season to get through. And yes. So with that in mind, and also just, you know, where we're at in the world, where these storms are becoming increasingly more damaging, where do you see the technology going, both in terms of capabilities growth and also scalability, you know, other regions and expanding the technology? What's your kind of vision and hope for it?
For sure. I think, you know, this is a very important moment. You know, we see this growing number of hazard events, from wildfires to hurricanes to storms, and the impacts are just tremendous. So at Resilitics, we see data and AI as the next defense barriers for communities in coping with these disasters. Of course, we need better infrastructure. We need better mitigation plans. We need better, adaptation plans, et cetera. But another defense barrier would be data and AI for communities to better understand their risk. They can develop data-driven plans for emergency preparedness, response, and recovery, and have situational awareness during and after the event to make informed decision on a timely manner. So for us as technology developers, this is a very exciting time because of the growing capabilities in artificial intelligence methods and tools. So right now, one of the technologies that we are focusing on, and it's in the R&D stage still, is integrating our models into a large language model so that the users can interact with our digital twin and get the information the same way they interact with the, let's say, ChatGPT. Say, hey, I'm, you know, which areas in Houston have disrupted access to food right now? How is the power outage? What's the expectation of power to be restored? And all of that, you know, and as we see growing capabilities in forefront of AI in terms of methods and, you know, tools, we are seeing large vision models coming out, very exciting technology development in AI. All of those, we bring them into the use case of disaster response, disaster management, and disaster resiliency. So by growing these capabilities, I think we can equip communities with another, as I mentioned, defense barrier so that they can cope better, they can make more informed decision. And just think about what has happened in Houston since late April until now. We had a flood in Northeast, then we had tornado, now we had Hurricane Beryl, and we still have halfway through the hurricane season barely, right? And just think about those emergency management teams. They are exhausted. They are really exhausted. So when we think about the human side of it, AI can be their helper. Of course, one of the things that we have in our tool development is a human-centered, responsible AI approach so that we don't just develop a black box model. We want it to be, you know, trustworthy, interpretable, you know, and we follow responsible AI principles. But thinking about our users, instead of, you know, manually evaluating the data about where the damages are, which areas need food, we provide a technology that reduces the mental burden on them and help them make informed decisions. That's also tremendous because that could be a human AI collaboration that improves decision-making, make decision-making more efficient, and help, as I mentioned, help reduce the impacts on communities. So we can allocate resources more effectively, identify damages faster, need less people to go on the ground to do damage assessment, instead use our technology for damage estimation, all of that. And instead of kind of always be on the chasing of, okay, we are responding to the previous hurricane and we have another event and, oh my God, we don't have resources and bandwidth. All of that, we are always proactive. So, and these technologies provide that capability. So we are very optimistic about the future and what these technologies, and we are not the only, I call, resilience tech company out there. And I wish to see many, many more of resilience tech startups coming out because we need those. There is extent to which we need many tools to equip our communities, and one company cannot make all the tools. So our focus right now is on situational awareness digital twin. We need tools for fire risk prediction, for flood monitoring. So many, many tools that are needed, and ultimately we can integrate them into one platform for communities so that they can understand their risk better, make more informed decision about their response, recovery, that will reduce the impact. There was a report coming out of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce a couple of weeks ago that said, you know, every dollar invested on resilience will have $10 to $15 in economic and social benefits. So we see that even those impacts could be, or return on investment would be higher for AI-based technologies for augmenting disaster resilience capability. So that's an essential part of disaster response and disaster resilience in the future. And we hope to contribute to that.
I think, again, thinking to the future, how easy is it going to be in your mind? I know it's early days for Resilitex, but for plugging in the platform into new parts of the world, because it's not just Houston that needs this technology, although we do really need it.
Yes.
But when you think about that, how far down the road is that? And do you have any kind of major concerns about replicating the technology in other markets?
Sure. So in terms of the, we are still at early age. We are just 2 years old, but we have come a long way in 2 years. In terms of, the use cases, I think, our technologies are applicable for other parts of the country and also other countries. So one of the things we are constantly testing is the use case of our methods in other contexts, in other states, in other countries, to make sure that our methods and models are generalizable to other areas. And the need is out there. We constantly get contacted by organizations in other states and other countries learning about our technology, and they want to learn more about it and see how they can adopt it. So we hope to bring that technology to every county, every state in the U.S., and also other countries as well. And this is one, as a founder, you sometimes need words of encouragement. So one of the words of encouragement I received that stuck with me, and sometimes that we hit those roadblocks in our journey, gives me the energy to move forward. When we were demoing our technology in one of the meetings we had with one of our user organizations, the director of the unit after the meeting pulled me aside and say, "Ali, get out there and show it to every emergency management office in the country. They need it. This will be a game changer." And that was a sentiment that told me that what we are doing will have an impact, and it's a needed solution for an unmet need. So I think the need is out there, and we are partnering with growing number of organizations in other states and other countries to deploy our technology.
Yeah, absolutely. The need is out there, but as we've both mentioned many times, the need is also right here in Houston. So I guess just to wrap up, tell me a little bit about growing this company in Houston with both Houston communities, but also, pulling in your community at Texas A&M.
Yes. So we are very excited that our company is Houston-based. So we should not be just ground zero of disasters. We have to also be ground zero of solutions as well. So I think, Houston should be the hub for resilience tech innovation, as it is for energy transition. I think energy transition, climate tech, energy tech, and disaster tech goes all hand in hand. So I feel that, we are, growing in a right place. The relationship between the startup and my lab at Texas A&M is sustaining, provides a sustaining flow of innovation. We do R&D in the lab with ideas that seems to be wild. So we test them. It goes through the peer review process. We get feedback from the best in the field, from the expert in the field during the peer review process and publication. And after we vet that and we see, we have a proof of concept, then we can, scale that into a technology and bring it to the real world. And I think that cycle of innovation is very important, especially for a field, for a disaster tech, which is still in its infancy and it's growing, right? So if you think about the number of VC companies who have interest to invest in resilience tech compared to other sectors, there might not be as many. It's growing. It's a very positive movement, or federal programs are growing supporting resilience technologies. But since we still have more needs for R&D, this relationship we have with my lab to do the R&D, do the proof of concept, bring them, is an excellent sustainable flow of innovation that help us just innovate and bring the best technology and models to our users.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and telling me all about Resilitix. I hope things slow down for you, both for your ability to do R&D and also that we don't get hit by another storm anytime soon. But it's really interesting to know that, you know, the future of storms are going to be more and more data enabled. So thanks to Resilitix. So thanks for the work that you're doing and for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Natalie.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.